And so with that, let us take our moment of silence. And with no further ado, let us welcome Dave.
This is from Paulus Press, and it shows you all the books that I have with them. And you'll see this one that we're using, When Catholic Means Cosmic, and the one that goes with it, which is my most recent one, called When Mary Becomes Cosmic. And I don't have it here, but it is at Chaucer's or on Amazon. The subtitle is A Jungian and Mystical Path to the Divine Feminine. So I think you'll really like it. And I based it on the Litany of Loretto, the one we were brought up with. I try to show how all those titles are archetypal. I'll talk a little bit about archetypes today. But first I wanted to say that I feel it's a true grace that's been given to me to know what I know and to be able to share it as I do. And I just want to acknowledge that as important to my sense of myself as a teacher. I don't feel like these things come from me. I feel like they come through me. Your presence here helps awaken some of that in me. So, thank you. Okay. Good. You're welcome. So, let's take a look. This time we're on chapter 4 of our book, When Catholic Means Cosmic. And I wanted to start with this wonderful quotation on page 111, which is by Paul Tillich. He was the head of the Harvard School of Theology when I was in the seminary. And this is the 50th anniversary. This month is the 50th anniversary of my ordination. So, anyway, we admired him and read many of his books. And this quote is so helpful. The reason that religious symbols become lost is not primarily because of how science criticizes religious beliefs. The first step toward the non-religious attitude of the Western world comes from religion itself. When it defended its great system, not as if it were about symbolic realities, but as literal stories, it lost the battle to hold people's belief and attention. Theologians and lay people helped transfer the powerful expressions of the dimension of depth that religion can offer into objects or happenings on the horizontal plane in the three-dimensional world. There the symbols lose their power, their mystical bigger power and bigger meaning, and become an easy prey to physical, biological, and historical attack. So along come new theories in physics, biology, and new realizations about what really happened in history, and those make a religion seem less credible when that religion put all its accent on everything is literally true. This summarizes the central point of our chapter. So the challenge the challenge is to find the mystical archetypal wealth that's in the symbols that we've lived with all our lives, to see something beyond what is visible when all you have are the pictures and the images and the things. So let's begin with what is meant by an archetype. So arche in Greek means the beginning, as in menarche, the first experience of menstruation. So archetype, and the type is the same as in English. There are original and universal themes and energies, more than just themes to think about, but actual energies inside us that have been in us from the beginning. Arche beginning. What are the examples of these archetypes? Well, for instance, we have a sense in us, even if we didn't have a mother, just by being human, we have a sense of a motherly energy. And we have a fatherly energy also. We have a sense of some reality beyond ourselves. You might call it a divine energy or a God energy. They aren't thoughts. They're like orientations in us to move in the direction of finding this kind of energy in someone else and in ourselves. So even if you didn't have a mother, you were brought up just by your father, something in you would want the female style of nurturance because the motherly energy is in you as a human. Everybody follow so far? Now, these energies are easy to discover because they're also the characters in stories. So stories will often be about a mother or father, or a divine being, could be about a king, about a queen. Often there's a villain. That's what Jung called the shadow side or the dark side of our humanity. And the main character is called the hero or heroine. There's also a character who's kind of tricky. That person is described as the trickster. Often there's a child who is very special, a special or divine child. I talked about this in the chapter. And sometimes the child is an orphan. So in the course of everyone's life, you will meet up with characters like this, and you will go through periods in your life when you feel more like one of these. For instance, if you're feeling abandoned or alone or isolated, then you're experiencing the orphan archetype. Archetype, or another way of saying, that potential energy is in me and I'm now meeting up with it. Hopefully in the course of life, we will experience all of the archetypes in ways that help us expand and deepen who we are as humans. So when you come across with motherly energy, whether you're a man or a woman, because these are beyond gender, when you come across with some motherly energy towards someone who seems to need it in that moment, you are touching into the fuller meaning of who you are. What is the full meaning of who we are? It's visiting and expressing all these human possibilities, awakening to all these energies, and wherever possible, sharing them with others. Questions about this part? Everybody getting the basic concept? They're not actual people. They're energies in the sense that there's something in you that will want to move in one of these directions, given whatever may happen. King and queen represent power. Now, sometimes what we do is we project these onto others and not see them in ourselves. So we think, oh, yeah, he's a big shot here. She's a powerful person. And I wish I had that in me. But actually, you do. It's just that you project it onto someone else and see it in someone else, not in yourself. That would certainly be true of the villain one. It's hard for most of us to recognize that at times we are given over to the dark side. But we easily see it in others. Hi, Jackie. Sure.
Could you give us an example of the trickster?
Yes, that's an easy one.
Is it?
Yeah. No problem. Thank you. The trickster in our culture is shown mainly in cartoons. It's the little character who overthrows the bigger one. Simple example. Wile E. Coyote is of a higher species than a bird. Because he's a mammal and bird is lower on the biological totem pole. But this particular bird shows over and over again that even though he's so wily, he's not as smart as he thinks he is. So the one who seems like he would have less power overturns the one who has more power. Everybody follow? And the other examples would be Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. He's a human, the other one is a rabbit, but yet the rabbit over and over again fools the other one. Tom and Jerry would be another one. The mouse turns out to be always come out on top, whereas it seems like the cat would be the one who should win the day, but he doesn't. So that's trickster energy. And that also shows you that that these archetypes appear in stories. Every one of them.
In the real world, it would be Donald Trump.
The cartoons in our culture, the... Pardon? Yes, we're seeing a lot of archetypes now. Okay. Mainly the trickster deflates your overinflated ego. That's the main purpose of the trickster. So we need this person or this energy to hit us every once in a while keeps us humble. Now, what if religion were something that comes along in human life and takes these archetypes, and instead of just using them as part of literature, so they could be seen as part of literature, making a story more interesting, or they could be seen as part of psychology, as happened in the Jungian view. But religion comes along and says, these archetypes go beyond just a literary story or psychology. They tell us something about the divine encounter that's going on all the time. How we as humans find or make contact with the divine life. And look, it shows itself in these very same archetypes. There's a God figure, there's a divine mother, God the Father. Oh, I forgot to mention the wise guide. That would be Holy Spirit. Villain, Satan, Lucifer.
David.
Trickster is the same as Lucifer. Yeah.
The Holy Spirit is the trickster.
At times, yeah. and, of course, the divine child is Christ at, you know, the baby Jesus, Christmas time. So, if you were to take all of these literally and go over to this side and say they're characters and they appear in stories, but unlike the story of Robin Hood or Alice in Wonderland, our stories happen to be true. And so all these characters are not archetypal energies. They are all historic, and everything that we see about them in the Bible is to be taken literally. So that would be one extreme. The other extreme is to say they're nothing but metaphors. And the point in the middle would be they are archetypal energies, they are metaphorical, and something did happen and is still happening that shows how the divine and the human want to be together. So in our book, in my perspective, that's middle point is where faith is. So if there are nothing but characters, and religion came along and said, let's use this cast of characters to tell our story, that would be one extreme. The other extreme would be, they're not characters, they're actual, this is all actually true and literally true. But somewhere in the middle is this combination. does this fit for everyone? Do you get the basic concept? So we're trying to appreciate how these energies are in us, how they're in the world around us, how we keep meeting up with them. And they seem to have a bigger life than is in the character. Seems to be more going on than just what's in the character. For instance, think of your own mother. And so that was your first connection with the mother archetype. And your mother has a face that's different from the face of all the other mothers that the rest of us have. But when you really look at your mother, you realize that she represents something more than just herself, that she is in a position that is motherliness that's actually bigger than any one person. And that you felt motherliness from your aunt, and you felt motherliness from a teacher, and sometimes you feel motherliness from your friend. Sometimes you feel motherliness from one of your children towards you. That shows you that the motherly energy must be bigger than any one person. That's what I mean by it's a combination of someone and a bigger energy that comes through that person, but also is in many other places. So, for instance, in our religion, we have the Virgin Mary as our mother. So we have a physical mother who gave birth to us. But instead of letting it stop there, faith tells us, but there's a divine motherly energy in the whole universe, a cosmic motherliness that you can tap in on. And it doesn't have to be through a specific person. Without faith, there is motherliness coming from many directions, but always through humans. But with faith, that energy comes not only from other people, but you feel it in the world around you. Like particularly, say, in nature. In fact, we even use the phrase Mother Nature. So our faith becomes cosmic when it moves in directions like these rather than taking it all literally. And I gave examples in here of how this works. So, let's take a quick look on page 114. Because I want to make one more point about the archetypes. And just at the beginning of that second paragraph, religion includes rituals that celebrate passages along the journey of life. And then the rituals and practices of religion help us move through those passages, and they help us access what the passages are about. So in addition to there being archetypes, which are characters and stories, there's one more type of archetype. It's the archetype of the phases, passages that humans go through. For instance, there's the archetype of being born. So there's the archetype of birth and rebirth. It's the archetype of coming into adulthood from childhood. There's the archetype of suffering as a pathway to growth. There's the archetype of healing archetype of resurrection, coming back to life. That would be like the rebirth, ascension, in which you move above the literal view of things into a more mystical view, let's say. There's the archetype of transfiguration, in which you are revealed to yourself or to others as more than just what you appear to be. And of course, religion will take each one of these archetypes, themes, energies. In this case, they're more than energies, they're capacities in all humans. Another one would be enlightenment, capacity to wake up. And religion will take all of these capacities and see them in a particular story. In our case, it's the story of Christ. But it's also the story of Moses and other. And
detachment, death, letting go.
Would be also on this list. Yes. And those certainly fit with the Buddhist view. So the capacities in you to make passages, to make transitions from one part of your life to the next, which are celebrated by sacraments, such as baptism, etc. Religion will take all of these and will present a person or persons who have gone through these and show us how to do it. And also let us know that we have these same capacities. So when you think of Christ crucified, risen, and ascended, you say to yourself, I will go through that too, probably many times in life. Can I do it the way he did? Can I ask his help as I go through them? And can I even think of myself as going through these things with him? See how this would have to be more than historic then. It can't be that he just died on Good Friday in the year 30. For this to be real, he would have to be going through all this every day. He was born, today is December 25th and April 25th, etc. It's the whole story being enacted through our story. I live now, not I, but Christ lives in me. And the sacraments are the ways to celebrate these various archetypes. Questions about this part? Okay. So one word more about sacraments. Come on up. But while you're coming up, I just want to read this. And this is by Joseph Martos. He's written the book that's used in seminaries when they study sacramental theology. He's a modern, wonderful teacher on this whole thing. Sacraments, I'm on 116 at the bottom. Sacraments concretely symbolize what they abstractly stand for. When in the course of their performance, they make what they represent experientially and personally present in sacred space and time. This is a very radical statement. Because look what he's saying. They're real to the extent that you experience what's going on. If you're just sitting there and watching the Mass happen, that is not the sacramental experience, according to him. He's saying you have to actually experience and be personally present. It's not just like a factory that's producing something. Mass is not producing the host. It's real to the extent that something is being experienced. This is a very radical statement. I never heard this in a seminary. Joanna?
I'm not really sure what my question is, but it would seem to me if these are capacities and energies that we are born with,
yeah,
that somehow or other they would start somewhere and evolve and not be static. They would change with time in an evolutionary way. But then I question, you know, when did they start in mankind? You know, I picture mankind sitting around a fire in the Bronze Age, for example. And he was also human. He would have been born with these energies, capacities. But surely they have changed through the ages.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so. And also in the course of our life, they present bigger and bigger challenges, and they go deeper and deeper into what our life is about and what's required of us. So using Tom's example, if you say there's an archetype of detach and let go so that you can come into some new way of being, the way you did that on the first day of school, you detached from mother's embrace, you let go of the comfort of home, and you accepted the challenge of school and of being with the other students, a new social context. Well, that was the archetype of detach, let go, and find a more mature way of being, come into something new. But when you had to do that same thing at the end of a relationship, it was much bigger, and that deepened you much more than what happened on the first day of school. And when you were lying on your deathbed and you realized, oh, this is the final detach, let go, and move on, and it was even bigger, each time you go through it, your capacity deepens and your trust in yourself grows.
So this happens individually, but it can also happen on a broad, much broader sense, moving from the literal to,
yes,
something more metaphorical.
Yes. For instance, when the church itself, mm-hmm, moves away from taking it all literally, which is how we were taught, to, well, let's see it in a more metaphorical, archetypal way, and then the whole community has made a transition. And
thanks.
It's become a much deeper, then the meaning is much deeper. Rather, mm-hmm, than, oh, these are all miracles, and they only happened once.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I know it's hard to get this fully, and I don't get it fully myself because it's mystical and mysterious, but it's certainly true that capacities for all of these, to be born, to become more mature, to go through suffering, to find healing, to feel like you've come into a whole new life, to feel like you've ascended from a very base way of seeing things to a higher way of seeing things, to feel yourself now transfigured into something new, to find enlightenment, to let go and to move on. All of these are capacities in us. We can't doubt that they're in us. And they're a little bit scary to go through. A religion that really helps us gives us a model who went through them, which we have in Jesus, and the grace to go through them, which we have in the Holy Spirit. That's how it helps us. Hi, Christiane.
Hi, Dave. It just occurred to me that we are really meant to go through this in order to grow.
Absolutely.
And literal interpretation would then actually stunt growth because it prevents us from going through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it occurred to me too, because there's a case we are in our family right now where we were created to go through all that, and it's also synchronized on the body level, that there are energies flowing that determine health, which the Chinese have known for a long time, you know, and science even is confirming now that all this works together. As the body grows, we are meant to grow spiritually, but if there's a stunted growth on one hand, there can be a physical expression of that stunted growth.
Mm-hmm.
In our family, we have a great part of the family that's a very fundamentalist. And a young man, he's 36, was raised to think literally. We had conversation over dinner one day, and we talked about the Christ within us. And he said, "That's baloney. That's baloney," you know, and he was determined. That's how he was raised. 20 years later, we get an email. He says, "I don't know what to believe anymore. It's all falling apart." 5 years later, he woke up suddenly blind. He's 36. He woke up blind one morning. Goes to every doctor, medical test known to mankind. And it's a friend of my daughter's who is blind who said, "Well, how about conversion disorder?" We mentioned it to him, and he goes, "What the heck is that?" And I said, "Well, it's
when your body shows
your body that. Blocked and couldn't handle it anymore, and just decided to shut down." And he has the worst time letting go of all this conditioning in order to get well.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing the harm that the blocked energy of all the archetypes can do, to the point of physically freezing a person. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting. I think God created us. Everything has to grow
synergistically.
Voila. Mm-hmm. And if we don't, we are stunted. And sometimes the stunting can affect us physically severely. Anyway, I thought
that's a very good point. Thank you. So this gives us a new view of wholeness. It's that in the course of your lifetime, you allow all of the energies to come through you and experience the passages that go with the other archetypes, and that the whole thing happens not only internally but physically. Jim?
A very important archetype is that of the warrior and the peacemaker.
Okay, yes. Warrior would be another example of, would be on this list. Warrior, peacemaker, it's any character in a story. You know, I remember watching the Bill Moyers interviews with Joseph Campbell. And that's the first time I heard this concept. He said, the characters and the events in religion are to be looked at as archetypal energies that are in all of us. The very same thing I'm saying today. And in mature religion, you would not take them literally. You would see them in this archetypal, metaphorical way. And I remember thinking to myself when he said that, but there's one religion that's an exception, and that's Catholicism, because our events did actually all happen. And it's all literally true. And I know he was a former Catholic himself. But I remember thinking that. Look at the, you know, I had to make a big transition after all those years of being taught that everything literally happens, not only in catechism, but all through the seminary. We never got to this point that we're talking about now. And it was a way of limiting our faith. It wasn't that we had more faith when we saw it literally. It limits you because it excludes you from the story. All these things happen to Jesus and Mary, and we're just adoring them from afar. Whereas with this view, oh, they showed us who we are. They showed us what's in us. They showed us the kind of passages that we could make ourselves with their help. Not only did they show us, but they continually give us the graces to make it happen. Now you have a deeper kind of faith. It's not as if you're losing your faith when you see it this way. It's that you're finding it. Everybody follow me? Get the basic idea? Okay. So, let's take a quick look then on what prayer would look like when you come from this place. Because this, seeing all these energies and capacities in yourself, means that there is no longer a dualism. And so this changes what prayer looks like. So most of us have this idea. There is a God up in heaven, and he knows everybody and knows all things. And when I start praying, he turns and listens. And then he answers, yes or no. That would be a very dualistic way of looking at prayer. But instead of going that way, we could think of prayer as a union and since our topic is cosmic and communion, so it's all happening, it's divine and human together rather than I'm addressing somebody up in the sky. And in the moments in which, I gave the quote there from Brother David Stendelrast, that in deep, meaningful moments of union, of connection, that would be the equivalent of prayer. See if I can find his quote. Because I thought he's... Oh yeah, here it is. I'm on 117. If what is called God means, in the language of experience, the ultimate source of meaning, then those moments that quench the thirst of the heart are moments of prayer. when you're making meaningful connections, that's prayer in action. It can't be like an entreaty from earth up to heaven. It can't be like that. I think it's stated best in the prayer of Reinhold Niebuhr that was then taken over by Alcoholics Anonymous. That may I have the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I have here on page 118 that this is a prayer that places an intention that's already in the universe. So you're joining the intention of the entire cosmos that wants what? That wants acceptance of what is. That's the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. That wants change to happen so that things get better and we have a world of justice, peace, and love. That's the courage to change what can be changed, and the wisdom to know the difference. Those three energies are everywhere around us, and when we join into them, that's a prayerful moment. I also talk in here about mindfulness meditation, and that helps us also get to this place of union. By union and union with the divine and communion with all beings, it's the same style as in mindfulness, because in mindfulness you are making contact with the here and now, rather than getting caught up in all the gossip that's coming from your ego. So you're in union with this particular moment. You are present in what is, rather than being pulled away by your thoughts, projections, judgments, etc. Or another way of saying it is that prayer is presence. And presence has union and communion in it. That won't happen when it's all presented in a dualistic way. And over on 121, I have the second paragraph. The deepest prayer is, yes, letting go of ego. I use the Greek word kenosis, which means an emptying out. I'm emptying myself of ego. Christ is the model. Emptied himself of attachment to his divinity so that he could be fully human. It's an attitude of surrender. And in this prayerful open space, we come to understand our spirituality as a meeting of these three practices, to live the life of Jesus in the world by our commitment to his teaching, to say yes to all that happens as a grace, and to remain aware of the abiding presence of God. I'm on 122, giving the three meeting places that come together in the prayerful open space. So this would be how to combine faith and prayer. It's the prayer of faith, when the prayer has three directions. May the life of Jesus be my life. as I follow his teaching, especially that of the Sermon on the Mount, which we'll talk about next week, may I say yes to all that happens as a grace, and may I ever be aware of the abiding presence of God in my life. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And of course, I put this in a Trinitarian form. So the first is toward Jesus, second is toward the Holy Spirit, and the third is toward the Father. Jesus, living your life, Holy Spirit, giving me the grace to do so, always present, Father as Good Shepherd. And I end that section with that wonderful quote by Gandhi: my greatest weapon has been silent prayer. After all the things he did politically, he says what helped most was silent prayer. And most of this kind of prayer would be silent. The words no longer make much difference or have much meaning. It's just this feeling of union. And I'm sure everybody in here has had it, especially in nature. You notice you just feel one with everything. That's a prayerful moment. All right, so let's take a short break, and then we will continue.
Thank you.
Thank you.